Senate would please come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Monday, January 19th. Anderson District 2?
Here.
Anderson District 28?
Here.
Barnard?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Present.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Kraft? Dockstader,
here.
Driscoll,
here.
Emmerich,
here.
Escobel,
here.
Geis,
here.
Hastert,
here.
Hicks,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Kinski,
here.
Landon,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Pappas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Platern?
Here.
Wasserberger?
Here.
President Nicholas?
Here.
30 present.
The pastor today is Pastor Mender from Cheyenne. I understand he was previously affiliated with Senator Ross's church and left because of Senator Ross.
Who wouldn't?
Amen. Please join me with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January the 16th, 2015 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. The new businesses that we have... I don't see there. We have Anna Bartholomew here today, and she brought her dad, who happens to be a doctor. Anna's father is Dr. Bartholomew. He's a family practice physician from Saratoga. If you'd give them a welcome. There's no nurse, so I think Anna's going to be our nurse today as well. She'll get a little help from her dad if she needs some. The quote of the day is, we just heard, we're like gold. Today in Wyoming history, in 1915, the Casper delegation introduced a bill that would allow for popular vote to determine the permanent location of the capital here in Cheyenne. Thought of the day, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. Martin Luther King, Jr. See, we on unfinished business. We've got concurrences, joint conference reports, appointment to committee. Isn't that the adoption rules? So that's what's there. So the next item on the agenda, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, is the adoption of the rules. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate rules and joint rules previously adopted as the temporary rules of the Senate of the 63rd Legislature, together with any amendments adopted by the Senate, be adopted as the permanent rules of the Senate of the 63rd Legislature.
You've heard the motion. Before voting on the motion to adopt the temporary rules as the permanent rules, the Senate will first consider any proposed amendments to the temporary rules. Amendments to the temporary rules require a majority vote for adoption. Mr. President. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move that Senate Joint Resolution 1, Senate Joint Resolution 2, and Joint Resolution 1 be adopted as amendment to the rules and ask that they be read in at this time. Mr. President, I stand corrected. I meant to say joint rule. So, Mr. President, I will restate that motion. I would move that Senate Rule 1 and Senate Rule 2 and Joint Rule Number 1 be adopted as amendment to the rules, and I would ask that they be read in at this time. And then after that, I would ask my colleague from Fremont County who worked on the Legislative Process Committee to explain these rules to the Senate.
The reading clerk would read the amendments.
Senate Rule 1, create Senate Rule 11-5 as follows, amendments. Senate Rule 2, create Senate Rule 13-6 as follows, rules for the budget session. And Joint Rule 1, amend Joint Rule 2-2 by creating a new subsection, little c, to read joint rules of the House and Senate.
You've heard the motion. The motion was made for all three of the rules, but we'll consider each one individually. We'll begin with Senate Rule 1, Senator Case.
Mr. President, Senate Rule 1 reads distribution of amendments. Upon approval of the text of an amendment by the sponsor, the amendment will be numbered. Once numbered, the amendment shall be released to the public as soon as reasonably practical, unless the sponsor specifically directs that distribution of the amendment be delayed. Mr. President, this is largely aimed at amendments probably on the budget for the most part, Mr. President. It is a Senate practice that rules have been not released to anyone. Amendments have not been released to anyone until and are distributed to the Senate the morning of discussion of the budget. Our colleagues down the hall have a little different process. When an amendment is numbered down the hall, it's released to the public and it's available on the web. Ours are not. We've had concerns expressed to people that are tracking the budget. They'd like to be able to see the amendments. What this does is allows it to be released to the web if the member so desires. It allows a member, though, to keep a proposed amendment silent, but it does improve the ability for the public to track amendments. That's what it does, Mr. President. I urge its adoption. It came out of the Process and Technology Committee.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Let me get your mic on there.
You know, it works easier if you use the mouse. You can do it quicker. I've learned by that.
Yeah, I've learned
it takes
too.
A couple years.
Might take me three. I'll be on the beach in Mexico.
The question about this is that in reading the rule, there's a potential for the amendment to go out to the public before we on the Senate ever see it because of the way in which we get our amendments. And so I'm wondering, I'd like some discussion on that because this does not necessarily mean that we get that at that time.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, related question. The discussion has been in terms of the budget amendments, but as I read this, and I, you know, just saw it and haven't had a chance to plug it in or anything, it looks to me like it affects all amendments. And I would like to know on the committee amendments, when are they going to be made available? Because they come out of committee, they get worked up in the attorney's office, and then I know I always, before I release them for distribution here, check them over because there's sometimes you can get errors in transmission between committee and the LSO attorneys. I think a couple of times every year I will say, no, this is not what the committee voted on, and we'll go back and look at the secretary's records and try to reconstruct what actually happened and get it right, and we catch mistakes. And I'd hate to have one of those released that had some kind of a error in it that wasn't right. So I'd like to know, with this rule in place, what would be the procedure on amendments coming out of committee?
Mr. Vice President, would you please come up to the desk? Senator Rothfuss. Hold on. Mr. Vice President, that's you, Drew. No, I want you to come up here. If you want to talk, that's fine, too.
I want to talk.
Oh, you want to talk. Okay.
But right
I didn't
now,
want to say anything, so I'm relieved.
Senator Rothfuss.
Okay, Senator Rothfuss is on. Okay, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. To address those two concerns, when we worked this in the Technology and Process Committee, the release before concept is accurate, but it's not required. In other words, when the bill is numbered, assuming that there's no direction to staff not to release it, it would be released to the Internet at that point for distribution. So we would have, as the Senate, the same access to it as the public, because it would be a public release over the Internet at that moment. That said, the sponsor of the amendment could direct that it not be released at that point, pursuant to this rule, and that would take care of that concern, and then it would only be released when it was being distributed on the floor, which is sort of the current practice. With regard to whether it's just budget amendments or all amendments, it is all amendments. That was the intent. Most of the discussion focused around the budget amendments, where we have a lot of process restrictions. We know we have a lot of budget amendments that come through, so the discussion focused there. But with regard specifically to the committee bills, the concept of the numbering is the key sentence here. Upon approval of the text of an amendment by the sponsor, the amendment will be numbered. So that's trigger number one. And that requires that proof. So the chairman of that committee would have to authorize numbering of that amendment, and at that point it would be subject to release if they didn't direct it. Our understanding from staff is that there will basically be two buttons, so to speak, in our drafting system now. One is to number that and approve it. The other is effectively to release and distribute. And there's some discretion there that the chairman could use or members of the Senate in terms of when to release that material. We tried to take into consideration the concerns that we've heard today and provide flexibility to the sponsor and to the chairman to ensure that it could go the way they wanted it to go, but allow for that possibility of an immediate release under circumstances where that's preferable.
Thank you. Senator Rothfuss, Mr. President.
President, the minority floor leader just expressed and explained the issue with respect to the software package. So we have a software package that drives amendments and when they get circulated among the staff. So when a member actually approves the amendment for distribution, the staff member clicks a box at that time, and that's when you clear it to go out to the floor. So the minute you say, go ahead and distribute it, the staff check a box on the software package, and that kicks out the process, so it would then flow through for distribution. It's less of a problem with the most bills because, as you know, let me stop there. It's in the House, when a member hits the bill or the amendment for distribution, the amendment is actually then numbered and it's distributed to the floor. So those of us that were on the House will remember that by the time that the budget comes up or any amendment or any bill that will come up, you would have a list of amendments that came out 1 through 60. And then that morning that you would get a list of the order that they're going to be considered, which is different than when the order was of numbering, and members on the House then reorganized their amendments. And you're doing that on the floor and trying to get everything organized, then you launch. In the Senate, we've adopted a different practice. In the Senate, the practice has been that even though you authorize it for distribution, the actual copy of your amendment does not get distributed to the floor. And that's not because we don't allow that to happen. It's rather we've done it as a courtesy to the members that in the morning you get a packet of all your amendments that have been organized in the order in which they're going to be considered. So we have elected on the Senate side, as a courtesy to the members, to delay the delivery of the amendments to the floor in order that you'll get a packet that are in order. And in fact, when it comes to the budget bill, even though you might authorize amendment for distribution on the day before, the members of the floor of the Senate will not receive it until the following morning because you get a packet of all the amendments that have already been organized in the order they're to be considered. So what this does mean is that the members of the public may see the amendment before you see it. Of course, you could walk into the staff and ask them for a copy. In fact, the Appropriations Committee generally at the evening goes in and asks for a copy of the amendment so they can review them over the evening. You'll be able to go online and see them just as other members of the public would. But it gets a little bit interesting on the Senate side because we have adopted this practice to distribute amendments late prior to consideration for the convenience of the member, so you'll get an organized packet with amendments not in the numerical order rather than the order they're going to be considered. But that's something we do as a courtesy to ourselves, and it is true that these amendments, they will not get distributed before the member checks the box or tells the staff to distribute them, but they may be on the website before you get your courtesy package.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President.
Actually, we're going to go to the President.
Go ahead. Senator Scott.
Yeah, and that all makes a good deal of sense to me that I've heard so far, but what I'm a little concerned about is on the Standing Committee amendments. They get automatically numbered, and that's always the same number structured, so the Standing Committee amendment will be the first one we discuss down here on the floor. And I just want to make sure that this isn't going to cause them to be released before we've taken the quality control step of basically having the chairman look at the amendment and our committee, I look at them, and the committee secretary looks at them, and just as a quality control to make sure that the amendment really reflects what the committee did, because we've had some troubles over the years, just in it's natural and human, in getting that information transmitted effectively to the attorneys and getting it translated into the actual amendment. And I want to have that quality control before it goes out to the public. So I hope this rule, this new rule, won't mean that they go out as soon as they're numbered, because if there's going to be a standing committee amendment, it gets numbered automatically, and then we double check it, and then I won't sign the committee report until I've done that. So maybe that's the protection, but I'm a little concerned where we're turning, I think, part of this over to a computer.
And I think for the floor to Senator Case, and Kenneth, Senator Case, you may explain that there's two numbering systems, the staff numbering and the final number. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. The standing committee amendment number is an automatic number. It's always Senate standing committee amendment number one. I do understand the point, but that's not what we're talking about here. Exactly what we're trying to do is to accommodate the practice of the Senate with respect to internal distribution of amendments, and also make all these amendments available upon release by the sponsor, only upon release by the sponsor to the public, in a manner that the public has come to expect with our friends down the hall. So will there be problems? Yes, there will no doubt be errors, just like we have corrected copies of amendments. That'll happen again. And that'll happen on the web versus here. But with respect to committee bills, you will see no change, and they will not be released until you authorize them to be released to the web. And I agree that committee amendments are often the most difficult ones, I suppose, and most extensive. But you'll have the same processes that you have now. When it's finally signed, I suspect you'll even have one more step. After you've signed all those copies of the committee report, you'll be able to say, release it to the web or not, just like any other member. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Ross, Senator Case, can you confirm that the sponsor for the committee is, in fact, the chairman of the committee?
Yes, I would definitely confirm that, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. And, Mr. President, I just confirmed and followed up with staff on this exact question from the tall senator from Natrona County. And even though it's pretty clear what number, traditional sense, an amendment's going to have when it comes out of committee, the amendment is not numbered in the formal sense, as we refer to in rule, until it receives that approval from the committee chair. So it takes care of this language should satisfy the concerns that we have from the good senator from Natrona.
Further discussion on the Senate rule number one? There being none, the question is before you is whether or not Amendment SR0001, which creates Senate Rule 11-5, will be adopted as part of the Senate rules. The reading clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel. Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Johnson, Kinski, Landon, Meyer.
Excuse.
Pappas, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Scott, Von Platen?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Senate Rule 1, 29 aye, 1 excused.
By your vote, Senate Rule number 1 has been adopted. The next rule for our consideration is Senate Rule 2. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. That rule was previously moved by the majority floor leader. Mr. President, this is another rule to provide information to the public on the web. This has to do with the listing of introductory votes. What has been the practice in past years is our colleagues down the hall had cobbled together a list of proposed bills during the budget session and the order of which they would be considered for introduction. The list is always tentative, subject to change, of course, and subject to scheduling. But they would post that list on their bulletin board down there, and our colleagues in the lobby appreciated that posting. Last year, for the first time, we did an informal version of that over here, where we provided a list of what was at least so far scheduled to be up for introductory votes during the budget session. It's an important issue because, you know, that's oftentimes the only time a bill is debated, and people have become more focused on lobbying at that point. So our trial was successful, but it's very informal. This actually puts the practice in rules, but it's very flexible. It's totally the discretion of the President of the Senate, who sets the order of introductory votes. You know, that's a fairly chaotic time. There also may be other strategic reasons. There's all host of reasons why that list could change. But to the extent that one can be put together, it is to be put out on the web. One more step in helping the public to know what's going on, especially in the budget session, for those introductory votes. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President. Am I right in assuming the list will also be circulated down here? Because it was sure, I can understand why it's a good idea to put it on the web and why our colleagues in the lobby like to have it posted, but it was very useful for those of us here to have the list that was done previously. It just helps get your thinking organized.
Senator Case.
Out to the members when it's available. We've had a list, and really what happened last year is that members provided the list, walked out and put it up for the public. It became more formalized through the clerk. But so we're not changing. Once again, this has nothing to do with our internal process, and I do also find that list very helpful. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? There being none, the question on the floor is whether to adopt Senate Rule number 2, which creates Senate Rule 13-6. If the clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Yes.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper. Kraft, Dockstetter, Driscoll, Emmerich, Escobel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Johnson, Kinski, Landon, Meyer, Pappas, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Scott, Von Fladen, Wasserberger, President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate Rule 2, 30 aye.
Senate Rule 2 has been adopted. The next amendment for our consideration is Joint Rule Number 1 to amend Joint Rule 2-2. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, this has been previously moved. This rule changes to our joint rules, and it has to do with conference committee notices. In essence, it's the same kind of concept, trying to get some notice out about when conference committees meet. Believe me, the committee understands very well how difficult it is to schedule and hold to a schedule of conference committee meetings, especially later in the session. We had a trial last year when there was a form that a committee chairman, and when I say committee chairman, I mean a conference committee chairman, could fill out to indicate when the conference committee was meeting. The form was submitted to the chief clerk. The chief clerk, through LSO staff, got it up on the web. And so that was just another part of our notice process. Now, that doesn't always work, and there's always hitches in conference committees. Sometimes they don't even meet. And towards the end of the session, it's very, very chaotic. But this sort of says this is done on a best available basis. I imagine it will evolve to a time when those can be posted to the web from inside this chamber without having to go back to other staff. But so be it. It's clear that nothing about the lack of a notice or things like that defeats the bill, or and that's the subject of the last sentence here. It says, failure to comply with the subsection shall not invalidate or constitute cause for objection to the report of the conference committee. That's perhaps unnecessary. It's clear from our lawyers that a procedural thing doesn't undo a law. We thought we shouldn't let the conference committee be challenged. Once again, it's in the spirit of trying to get more public involvement, especially from the many, many people that follow what happens here from elsewhere in Wyoming on the Internet. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Bebaugh.
Mr. President, and just to further discuss that, and that was one of the big topics we had when we discussed this in your Rules Committee, the concern because of what happens as we get towards the end of the session. And if you look at that last sentence, it clearly says that failure to comply with this subsection shall not invalidate or constitute cause for objection. What we didn't want to do is have any kind of a rule to put that conference committee report in jeopardy. And a lot of times with you, individuals are on three or four of those conference committees, things are done very quickly. This in no way, shape, or form would invalidate that. So I just want to be sure the members understood. I would ask for your support of this, Mr. President.
Any further discussion on the amendment? If none, the question before you is whether Joint Rule Number 1, which amends Joint Rule 2-2, is adopted. The reading clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebaugh.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Joint Rule Number 1, 30-I.
By your vote, Joint Rule Number 1 has been adopted. Are there any further amendments? There being no further amendments, the question is, shall the temporary Senate rules and joint rules as amended be adopted as the permanent rules of the Senate for the 63rd Legislature? A majority vote is required for adoption of the motion. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebaugh.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich. Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 30 aye.
By your vote, the temporary Senate rules and joint rules have been adopted as amended to be the permanent rules of the Senate of the 63rd Legislature. Senator Case.
Privilege of the floor.
You may.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. President, we're very fortunate today to have a lot of good friends from my district and around the area where you lived. You had your youth, Mr. President, and where you went to school. So the folks here are from the Wind River Indian Reservation, and I see we even have councilmen here, and it's a great privilege to welcome them here. They're with the Wind River Native Advocacy Center. They've come to raise the level of participation among our citizens of the Wind River Indian Reservation with respect to the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Would you please join me in giving them a very warm welcome? We're very glad you're here. Thank you very much. You are there on both sides. Everybody stand.
Reports of standing committees.
January the 19th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 60, Deferred Compensation Plan Automatic Enrollment, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 19th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 59, Wyoming Public Television Endowment Accounts, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 19th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 58, State Park Officers Benefits, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 19th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 74, Summer School Intervention and Remediation, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, O2, Coe, Dockstader, Pappas, and Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 34, Interstate Mining Compact Commission Membership, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Anderson, 28, Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Platern, Senator Von Platern, Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 12, Trespassing to Collect Data, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinsey, Von Platern, and Chairman Senator Christensen. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 25, Cease and Transfer Priority List, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Fladren, Senator Von Fladren, Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 26, Challenge Loan Interest Rate, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Fladren, Senator Von Fladren, Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 8, State Education Accountability and Assessment, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Dockstader, Pappas, and Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 44, Large Project Funding, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Burns, Hastert, Ross, and Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriation, to whom was referred Senate File 17, Resident Contractor Materials Preference, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 5, Quebec number 1, Historic Site 3, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, and Ross. No, Senator Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 16th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 2, Investment of State Funds, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, Senate File 8, State Education Accountability and Assessment, was read in. I'd ask that it be re-referred to committee number 2. It does have an appropriations. And also, Mr. President, Senate File 57 was read in. This is school facilities appropriations. I'd ask that that be re-referred to committee number 2 as well.
57's not. 8 has. Neither one of them has. Senator, Senate File 8 has been read in. Senate File 57 is not, so you have to make that motion again after it's read in. Without objection, Senate File 8 is re-referred to Appropriations Committee. 57 will stand until we read it in. Okay. Senator Von Fladern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 26, Challenge Loan Interest Rate, does have an appropriation. I ask that it be re-referred to number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, Senate File 26 is re-referred to Appropriations Committee. Has that been read in? We're just checking to see if make sure it was read in. It was. Okay, we're in good shape. Senator Bebout,
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just for members of the Senate to be sure and we understand, like in Senate File 26, that the chairman of that committee re-referred it to appropriations. Actually, it has money involved in terms of the revenue streams. It doesn't have an exact appropriation, but your leadership has discussed this and felt that those kind of bills dealing with funds and revenue should go to the appropriations for re-referral. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Bill on second reading. Senate File 24.
Senate File 24, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority Amendments.
There are no amendments, no discussion. Senate File. Yes, Senator Case.
I apologize. I will not be here tomorrow for third reading on this bill. I think it's a very, very important bill, and I would hope I could talk about it briefly.
This is the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority Amendments?
Yes, sir.
And would you like to have it laid back for a day so that you want to speak to it on third reading?
That would be fine if there's no objection. I'd like that very much.
And okay, so, without objection, Senate File 24 will be laid back one more day for second reading. And so we'll have second reading tomorrow, and third reading will be the day following when after Senator Case returns from Lander for services, and then that way you'll be able to register your vote. You understand that an absence is a no vote anyway.
I do. I'd love, Mr. President, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. All right. So there was no bill on second reading. We're now at the third reading. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and I move the third reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File 32, Small Employer Group Health Insurance. Senate File 49, Initiative and Referendum Revisions. And Senate File 52, Election Vote Centers and Electronic Poll Books. And, Mr. President, I ask that Senate File 52 be taken off the consent list.
Yeah, that script for the third reading. Thank you. Would anybody like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate, Senate File 32 and Senate File 49? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. President, just point of order. I think technically you should also read the short title.
Thank you. Having read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 32, Small Employer Group Insurance. Senate File 49, Initiative and Referendum Revisions. Chief Clerk shall call the roll.
On the consent list, Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns. Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Escobel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott, Von Fladern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 aye. Senate File 32. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 32. 30-I. Senate File 49. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 49. 30-I.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members of the elected to the Senate, Senate File 32 and 49 have passed the Senate. Senate 52, is there a request with respect to that item? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, without objection, I'd ask that Senate File 52 elections, vote centers, and electronic poll books be laid back for 2 days until January 21st so that we can work on some amendments and so that the good chairman from Lander would be able to be here for that discussion.
If there are no objections, Senate File 52 will be laid back for 2 days, so the third reading will be on Wednesday. There being no objections, Senate File 52 is laid back for 2 days to be considered on third reading on Wednesday. I believe we're at that order of business of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Emmerich, would you please approach the desk?
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 31. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 31, Department of Health Reports Cleanup, sponsored by the Labor Committee.
You've heard the reading of the bill?
It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 31 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I will attempt to explain the bill. This bill does two quite simple things. It abolishes all the Department of Health statutory reports. And it does it in two ways. Sometimes we could amend the sections involved. We had to amend the sections involved. There were other things that needed to be preserved. And sometimes we could just repeal the particular subsection that required the report. There's some, I believe, 22 of these reports, and we're shooting them all right between the eyes here. The second thing it does, you see in the top of page 2, the department shall provide to the Joint Labor, Health, and Social Services Interim Committee and any other appropriate legislative committee periodic reports from the department's internal performance measurement system. I have a copy here of what's in those reports. It, I think, will be a better replacement and serve the purposes better. Mr. Chairman, interesting process that led to this bill. It's been we have a large number of reports in the Committee 10 area, mostly from the Health Department. And our practice has been over a number of years to ask the committee members to look at all these reports they get and alert the committee if there's something in there that we ought to take legislative action on. And we've had very little response. And so we got our first meeting, we were doing this and say, has anybody got any concerns in any of these reports? And somebody asked, does anybody even read them? And that led to a bit of a discussion. And as near as we could tell, with one exception, nobody was looking at them. Nobody was taking a hard look at them. Nobody was reading them. Nobody was using them, both in our committee and elsewhere. And there was some testimony from the Health Department as to how much burden it was to prepare some of these things. And you look at them, and sure enough, somebody spent a lot of time and effort on it. And we got talking, well, if we aren't using them, why don't we just get rid of them? Simplify government, reduce the need for government, just get rid of them. And many of us had had experience either on the preparing end of similar reports or experience with other governmental units where reports that were totally unnecessary just went on forever. I remember experience I had with the federal government and some reports they were requiring of grantees in the health manpower area, and they had a whole hallway, extra wide hallway in one of their office buildings, and it was all filled with boxes of reports that nobody ever looked at. And now we would never get that bad, but we're spending a lot of time and effort on reports that just nobody's using. And Director Forsberg spoke up and he said, look, we're developing a set of internal management reports for the Health Department. And he volunteered, if you will really get rid of all these things, we'll let you have those reports, and they'll be more useful because that's what we're actually using, and we won't be constrained by the statutory requirements, and we can change them as appropriate as other things, some things fade from being needed and other things become more prominent. And we said to him, that sounds like a real good proposal. And the result was this bill, which does just that. We've been trying to quantify how much the savings really are for the Health Department, and I'm sorry we don't have a good figure for that yet. I suppose if we waited another week, we'd have it. But I don't see any point in holding the bill back for that. You know they're going to be significant. If it proves that it's not a wise thing to do. We can recreate some of the reports. I don't think it will be. I think we'll find that the new system works better and is a lot less work all around and gets us more useful information. I would also say for future reference, Mr. Chairman, that we passed this. We want to prevent us from having to do it again. And our experience has been in the first year or two, when you get a new program in, people will look at the annual reports because it is new and they want to see how's this thing we passed actually working. After that, once things get to be more routine in a new program and we know what's going on, people just cease looking at the reports. And sometimes it persists for a little longer than that. But I'm going to suggest as a future practice for reports for agencies, particularly in the Committee 10 area, but I suspect others may want to adopt it elsewhere. One-time reports that somebody has a very specific purpose that they're going to look at it for. And reports that last for 2 years or 4 years have a definite sunset date on them. Those probably are worthwhile. We should continue. Any other reports that come in and bills establishing new programs and whatnot, I would urge us to routinely put a sunset date on so we don't have to repeat this. But I would urge the Senate to adopt the bill. It's a chance to reduce some of the burden on our bureaucracy so they can do more productive things. And it's a chance to get rid of some unnecessary paper flow. And I think it'll result in a better system for getting information to the legislature. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chairman. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for the good senator from Bates Hole, I believe. you mentioned when you were talking about this bill about the fact that the federal government sometimes says boxes and boxes of these reports in hallways, and I could agree with that probably, but I just wondered sometimes would this affect anything, though, that maybe the health department was required to do as a checkoff requirement for funding or grants or anything like that, or is this okay with that?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Good question. No, it doesn't. Unfortunately, we can't affect all the things they have to do for the federal government. That's still an important burden. These are just the statutory ones we get.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I rise to agree with the tall senator from Bates Creek. I was on this committee, and those reports are numerous, and nobody reads them, and they need to be taken care of. Thank you.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not to belabor, but just to support the good chairman from my hometown, and pass along some information we received via electronic mail, which didn't arrive yet at the chairman's desk, but it really is estimated that these reports amount to about 550 hours that we're paying somebody somewhere to sit there and develop. That's a quarter to a third of a position that we could hire in the Department of Health to do something else. So, speaking from experience, as you know, I've had a career in public agency work, and there's no question that every one of us in that field think at one time or another, are we sitting here doing anything that somebody's going to look at? There's one report in particular. It's a federal report that I have to do, and it takes me the better part of a week, and I can almost assure you, Mr. Chairman, nobody reads it when it gets back to the Beltway. So I really like this bill. I appreciate the work of the Labor and Health Committee before I got there, and urge the passage of the bill.
Senator Bebop. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Out of curiosity, though, I mean, I understand the reporting. However, I think that it's a little overstates to say that no one reads, or at least no one pays attention. For example, just looking through the number of the ones that are repealed about Division of Aging, there's some others. If you look at the one, Mr. Chairman, on page 4, the cross top of page 5, which is these about on waiver services. And so, anyway, ultimately, look at that. There's certainly, when you get into waiver services, waiver services are always very expensive. Changes in waiver programs, we know, any changes in waiver programs are highly controversial. Most of us in this chamber have probably had at least one, if not 30 or 40 different people talk to us about the changes in the waiver program. Also, as we look at that, we're consistently, Mr. Chairman, asked when we do our budget each year to reduce the waiting lists for waiver programs. This is an example. And so while I understand and can appreciate and we certainly agree that formal reports oftentimes aren't necessarily read, I think that the information contained in those are oftentimes appreciated. And what I want to know is, so if these reports aren't there, how do we obtain that information with respect to our own concerns or the concerns of our constituents?
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to respond to that comment because that's exactly the question that we asked in committee, and I share the good senator's concern with the waiver system. I'm sorry that the body doesn't have access to the executive summaries that the health department provided us with. They're excellent. They're one-page little summaries. And then what you can do, and what they assured us would be very easy to do, is you read that summary, you say, this does not answer all my questions. I need more information. You email, you call, you immediately get the full report. So there's still access to the information. You just don't get everything on every single report. Thank you.
Senator Perkins. Senators, my response screen and my microphones have gone completely poor. Senator Scott, continue, so don't have too much talk on the sides, because I don't know whether I can turn your microphone on or not. Speak up.
Mr. Chairman, the executive summaries are, if you look on page 2 at the top, they'll provide the periodic reports to the department of performance analysis. That's what we're going to be using instead. That's where the amount. So we don't have that. Just the fact the budget documents that are going to be appropriated, this is like the formal reports. And I will say that
this is working on the controversy. I'm going to get through it. Thank you, Senator Scott. Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 31, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senators, I'm going to recess until the sound of the gavel because our sound system has gone poorly, and it may be 2 minutes and it may be five. So rest at ease.
Go back to old-fashioned ways of doing it.
Could be.
Thank
go, Fred. You broke. Took you 5 minutes to break the system.
Yo, Patty. It's on. It's lights on.
He's trying to be the queen of the sound.
I know. It's like excuse.
Committee of the Whole, please come back to order. I think our sound system is fixed. Before we resume, I'd like to explain to the public that may be listening to us that we had a slight computer hiccup, has been repaired, and we're now going to be going to the next bill. We have not left the public out of anything. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 44. The reading clerk will read the file, please.
Senate File 44, Large Project Funding, sponsored by the Natural Resource Funding Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 2. Whoops. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28. Barnard, Cooper, Kraft, and Johnson, Senator Cooper, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Cooper.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises and reports, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 44, Large Project Funding, do pass. There is no amendments on this bill, no standing committee amendments, that is, and for an explanation of the bill, I would like to yield the floor to the good Senator Driscoll.
Senator Cooper, who are you yielding to?
Senator Driscoll.
Senator Driscoll, I'm sorry, I couldn't see you behind all the pretty flowers. And I'm not disparaging the flowers. Go ahead, Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I bring you Senate File 44 today and ask for your favorable recommendation on it. This bill comes from the Select Natural Resources Funding Committee. Actually comes from the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resources Trust. This is the large project funding part of this bill. This year there's 5 projects that are in there. If you look through your bill, they're all, as usual, really wonderful projects that have to do with wildlife, water, and natural resources of Wyoming. The first one is the Boomie Howard Ditch, Neonatal Mule Deer 2, Bolton Creek 3, Little Laramie Conservation Easement, and there's a little snake in there that I missed over. I'm not going to go in depth on these projects. They're all phenomenal projects. I will go in depth a tiny bit, and you've heard this before. We've gone back and forth. This year, there's only one conservation easement in it. They've been controversial in the past. We told you they're going to come down. They have. These are five of approximately 60 projects this year. The small projects are all just funded directly out of the committee. The large projects that are in excess of $200,000 go through a fairly extensive process to get approved, and then they come for final approval to this body. The five together this year amount to about $1.569 million. They're funded out of a trust fund that we supplement. It's not fully funded at this time, but we supplement it to make it is. It's funded out of interest income. These projects, the process, the way it works, back to how many people look at it and how it goes, the board's a citizen board, consists of nine people, and on every one of these projects, even the small ones, at least one board member tours it. They decide up or down. They look at the leverage, how many partners are involved. Then it goes from there to the select committee, which myself and the good senator from Casper and Bags and a number of us lay on, goes to TRW and then appropriations, and then ultimately what we're doing today with you. Over the years since inception, there's been over 619 projects. They average about 90 a year. Most of the projects are small ones. If the small ones come back and do additional funding, they turn into large projects and you get to see them. So you don't have a process and a lot of little ones come. So far, there's been 446 projects funded through this in all 23 counties by 80 separate entities. It goes everywhere from Game and Fish to Conservation Districts to Trout Unlimited. All of these projects are highly vetted and are highly beneficial to open spaces, wildlife, and all the things we love about Wyoming. With that, I'm not going to go any more in depth. If anybody has questions in peace or otherwise, I would stand for questions.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, just a question, and if you can answer it, that'd be great. If not, if you could provide this body with the information. You know, as I recall our budget that we did during the last budget session, there were monies that was appropriated from the revenue stream in the Wyoming Wildlife Trust Fund, but also general fund appropriations. And it, my memory serves me correct, it was around $6 or $7 million general fund appropriations. Mr. Chairman, the question I have, if you could provide it to us, is the status of those appropriations and the projects and where we are in terms of the money flows. And when the money comes like this out of the $1.569 million, did that in fact come from the interest generated by that trust fund or from the general fund money we appropriated or a combination of both? If you could provide that or if you know, answer the question, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to answer that specific question, last year I think we appropriated $5 million of general fund. They also are able to spend the interest off of the corpus on that trust. The funds that we're are being spent here, the $1.5 million, are those that have already obligated, and it's an aggregate fund for the project. So I think after the expenditures with these funds, there'll still be about $5 to $6 million left to get them through the next year in the buy-in.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on page 5 of the bill, the bottom, the discussion starts with the Bolton Creek 3 project. I wish to inform the Senate that my ranch, Bolton Creek, runs through, I believe, two 40s that we own, and we have a gap on water gap on federal land on Bolton Creek. The 40s in question, the private 40s, are fenced into the BLM stock trail and informal arrangement that's been there for, well, longer than we've owned the place. I don't know when it occurred. So it's actually fenced into the BLM stock trail. The work being done, I believe, is well upstream of where we are. To the best of my knowledge, none of it is actually on our place. I suppose we're minorly affected if the beavers provide a
more year-round steady flow in the creek, which I think they may. But, Mr. Chairman, I thought in the circumstances I ought to reveal that to the Senate, but say I do not feel that it gives me any kind of conflict of interest on this particular bill, because the project really doesn't affect our operation at all.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, to answer that question about the money, the testimony was that we had $30 million balance in the account, $23 million was already accounted for, and this is part of that distribution, which leaves $7 million in the account for the future.
Question? Sorry, Senator Driscoll.
One last piece and explanation a little bit. The trust fund is around $100 million filled. That's, we're talking back and forth about it. The Senate, well, the legislature has backfilled that fund as if it was full, but it's treated as if it was full funded. It is not. It's something that I'm going to take this chance to tell you it should be. It's, these projects have done wonderful things for everybody. Back to the great Senator Bates Creek. You may have more water in the creek due to this, because this project actually increases inefficiencies in the irrigation above you or below you and may bring more water down. He's saying no, so that I'll sit down.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bolton Creek, not Bates Creek, and Bolton Creek goes into the Platte River on its own. I think one of the neighbors had, I don't know whether it's still active or not, a little irrigation in the headwaters of Bolton Creek, but I don't think anybody else does. It's not used for irrigation. What it does is it provides a major silt load to the Platte River and the siltation in Glendale, which is, of course, a long-term problem. And I think that's one of the things they're really aiming at here. If they can succeed in their effort to get beavers established on it, it'll produce some very nice riparian habitat on my neighbor's place upstream. It will reduce that silt load significantly, and that's a major problem, as you know, going forward. So it has those effects, but I don't think it affects irrigation any at all.
Question.
Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this might be a question not so much for the travel committee, but all for that select committee that deals with this particular area. And one of the things that we did, I believe, in the last budget session is we appropriated a large amount of money, around $2 million, to help with the Platte River. And those kind of projects really, to me, are what this is all about. And there's some really great benefits come out of that in terms of the Platte being continue to be one of the best fisheries in the lower 48. The question I have of that select committee, are we seeing more and more of those type of projects where we're trying to enhance existing fisheries like the Platte? You could talk about the Platte over by Saratoga and other areas. That would be a question for that select committee.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In addition to that, one of the other things that, so I think just to restate that, at least from my perspective, was I'd like to kind of see if the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee has a direction that they want to go with respect to this in the future, what their kind of what are their longer term plans. And also in the past, oftentimes there was we had received information about these particular projects, usually like a one page each on the various projects, showed better location, had a little bit further additional discussion about what the project was about. And if that's available, I would sure like to see that as well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I will make sure that that's provided to you prior to second reading. We will get that to you. To the good senator from Fremont County, absolutely, there is lots more fishery stuff going on the deal. And as far as direction is the select committee, this is actually a quasi-governmental committee, the way it's set up, of citizens. They're who pick the directions. They, with their director, Bob Budd, actually pick the directions. We merely approve the projects. We don't like them. We can obviously have input with them, but they're who selects it. They select the leverage. This is one of the best-run agencies there is. It's run with one person and a secretary. They handle a lot of money. They're highly efficient. You'll see from the reports that they do good work, and they do it at a really low overhead to the state of Wyoming. It's to me, it's a model of the way we ought to be doing a lot of the stuff we do. We'll make sure and have that report for you guys. We'll also try to include the small projects so that you can see that it isn't all just about big multi-projects. It's about building upon making it much better over time. A lot of these projects work in pieces and in conjunction with other areas for various types of habitat restoration, not just fisheries, but for wildlife and water.
To the good senator from the middle of the state, there is a brochure that was put out, I guess, or a pamphlet put out by the committee, by the Select Natural Resource Funding people, and we'll make sure you get a copy of that explains the programs. Thank you.
Might I also admonish members of the Senate back to the tall senator that is not visible at all behind his bills, that we should not use proper names on the floor, please.
Question on the bill.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 44, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 44 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 30. The reading clerk will read the file in.
Senate File 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise report it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund. And I will ask that the body take a close listen to this argument as presented by the good senator from Glen Rock, Senator Jim Anderson.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, as has been introduced, this is Senate File 30 having to do with Camp Guernsey Range Management Program. And in the nutshell, what this does is provide an enterprise account by which Camp Guernsey can use those funds collected from grazing for water, safety, and other management practices. But I will take a moment, if I may, to go through this with some detail. Spend just a moment with the first part of the bill, and then I'll get into a handout. And those of you who have this handout, I ask that this be passed out to all those members not on appropriations. You received this in appropriations. Also, those members on transportation have this. All other members should have received it this morning. We'll make reference to this in just a minute. At any rate, this is an act that relates to military department creating a fund for the deposit of monies for grazing fees at military training areas as specified. Within the bill, there is authorization for the Adjutant General to administer that fund and be able to expend those monies for range management operations, requiring for an annual report to the Transportation Committee, and providing for a continuous appropriation until such time as there is a sunset. And there is a sunset in this, a six-year sunset, and that date is provided for later in the bill in 2021. If you will, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to refer you to this. I'm not going to go through item by item, but I think we need to go through and give you a much better background in regard to how this has come about. Certainly a bit of introduction to Camp Guernsey, which, by the way, is within the boundaries of my district, not far from the ranch that my family has an interest in, and it's been one that I have had some knowledge with back for some time. I think if we would just go to the handout and look on page 3 of the handout in regard to background, this is one of 3 military training areas that allow for grazing. Grazing at Camp Guernsey has occurred for over 30 years. My family leased one of the ranches at a time when it had not been purchased by the military there. It is good grazing country, and of course we know that 2014 was a grass year, so it's a valuable asset in terms of the grazing resource. Prior to 2009, there was no formal program. The leases were inconsistent, and there was really not much competition going on. Page 4, in 2009, the military established a more formalized grazing program. They hired a consultant. They standardized the leases, and this was done along with the Attorney General. They set up a competitive grazing lease arrangement and established a plan with these lessees. And so then that program oversight then had a coordinator, a range rider, oversight board, internal range management working group to work along with the military. Going on, page 5, partnerships. People were addressed as such as the Native American tribal partners, Wyoming Game and Fish, the lessees, the veterans organizations, cultural, historic wagon train. And, of course, this is really central to the Oregon Trail, and a lot of the activity from Fort Laramie and that, really a central location. State forestry has been heavily involved. Also, community efforts through Boy Scouts, high school groups, and then the Civil Air Patrol. I'm not going to spend time with the terminology. We all know what lessee is. Animal unit month, and then stock density. Some benefits of grazing, first of all, being the management of fuels. You know that when you're using ordnance and things like that prone to fires, by grazing these fuels down, it can be a very much of a preventive measure. Also, they are developing water points, not only for the benefit of wildlife, but for the benefit of grazing, but also large storage areas in the event of fires on the property. Management natural resources based on ecosystem concepts, improve landscape through the managed productivity, and then concurrent usage. And just what we mean by concurrent usage is demonstrated by a photograph of a military camp with cattle grazing peacefully in the background. These leases are non-transferable. They're all designed to support the primary mission of the camp. Adjacent land or close proximity, long-term partnerships, flexible stocking, no internal fences as much as possible. It has to do with water improvement. It has a forage utilization plan, and then good communication, if not frequent communication, with those persons who hold the lease. On to page 10. Currently, those acres being grazed are close to 60,000 acres. And I'll just take a minute to say that for those of you who had known what it's like to have come through a drought period, although 2014 was a better year, 60,000 acres of available grazing is a real asset to a county or to a community to have available. The danger zones, which are not grazed, but those are the more highly impacted areas, those areas around the camp are about 17,000. Those areas are not grazed, but impact areas, small arms, individual weapons range, and that. There are about 15 parcels, and there's a map to follow to look at these, and there are about 9 persons or 9 companies that are holding the leases there. You'll see on 11, the North Training Area, and I won't take time to go through that, but it shows you the training areas that are excluded for training, the impact area, the grazing areas. The South, for those of you who are familiar with that, is the Gray Rocks Ranch, and that has somewhat different management. That's not an impact area, but that's an area that has a lot of wildlife, has a lot of hunting, wounded warriors, and whatnot have come in there for turkey and deer, and I think there's some elk in there. But this is another prime grazing area, and this is expressed in this on page 12. So that's the south area. You drive to Guernsey, you look off to your right going in from the west, and you'll see that Grey Rocks area there. Some grazing facts, and this might for those of you who have state grazing leases, and I know there's at least one person in the room and maybe others, two kinds of state lands in Wyoming. There is what we would call school trust lands, and those are the lands that are probably most often leased throughout the state. Then there are acquired lands, and the lands that we're talking about in the military proposal are acquired lands. You'll notice that there is a significant difference in the amount of monies paid or charged or agreed upon in these leases. The leases that upon state trust lands are somewhat less or cheaper, less expensive, I guess is a better word. Average rate on those is about $5.13 per month per animal. The military grazing rates go up to as much as $11 to $23 per AUM. The question you ask, why the difference? Well, the difference being on a state traditional grazing lease that you would find on state typical state trust lands, the person who leases those lands would take care of their own fence, watch their own water, do a lot of care of their own stock. Military lands, in order to secure a more safe environment, the military then takes care of the water and the fences so as we don't have as much activity that is not controlled within this area. So they charge somewhat more because of the service provided for the water, service provided for the fences, and that. The idea being the difference between the two types of lands, again, one being trust lands, these being acquired lands. There's a list of those fees that were collected in the years 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 16. To date, there's been a total of about $881,000 of monies collected for grazing. The funding cycle goes back to 2009. That's when they first started collecting grazing fees. Those monies then went to the general fund. 2010-11 collected grazing fees, requested upon use of these funds through the budgetary process. And so what they did then is those funds were collected to the general fund and then reappropriated back to the National Guard and spent on projects then. 2012-13, the grazing funds at that time were collected, but then the budget request for those to be reappropriated back was denied. And so I'm sure that's then what prompted the bill that we have before us. 2012, some of the projects that on the project list, they did airfield water tank, and then 2013, there's a list of project, a water well, a water tank, 50,000-gallon water tank, road maintenance, $34,000, fencing materials. And, you know, fence is an item there. And for some of us who were on appropriations some time ago remembered a $250,000 request for fences that had burned and needed to be replaced. Road culverts, $1,000, and then a range rider. This range rider had to be let go under this last arrangement where they did not have the funds to fund him. The range rider really maintains communication with the lessees, checks the fences, checks the water, and really is the one kind of the communication links between the military and those people who do the leasing. Projects list estimated costs that they have set up. They want to do some fencing projects, road maintenance, well maintenance. This is on page 16. And more fencing and water tanks and road projects. So this is really a kind of a breakdown of some of the things that they want to do. A specific map on page 17 in regard to the water development plan. And the existing and planned water projects are there. I won't take time to go through all that, but you can see that water is a definite emphasis, not only for wildlife and for the grazing, but for the safety and welfare of that whole property in the event of fire. And it talks about fire and management and that. Other issues, no funding, it says, has hurt, really negatively impacted fencing, road maintenance, water development. Range rider had to be let go in that. The options are, under a no funding option, to stop grazing. maintain the status quo, establish rain management operations fund, and then maybe some sort of trade management with lessees. But that's difficult to trade things out, and that is difficult to account for. The options, really, option one, no grazing, we don't think that's an option. Status quo, there's some rationale there. I'm not going to spend time with that. Establish a range management operation fund. And this would simply, what we're talking about, is an enterprise account. Trade with lessees, not an option, in my opinion. And then bringing us kind of to the end of the presentation, I would simply say, from a personal view, one who has been there, has seen that operation, one who represents the county, number one, it makes sense. Number two, you have said, I think I have said, and I believe government should be always, if every opportunity, run more like a business. This gives the opportunity for the guard to run the grazing operation like a business. Monies come in and monies are reinvested in that operation. The other thing I would say on behalf of the county is that when these lands are assumed by the state, they're taken off of the local tax rolls. This is an opportunity for that resource, those monies, to be used more at the local level than if they were deposited in the general fund, by which they can hire local contractors, purchase local materials, and put those monies back through the benefit of grazing and other things into the community. With that, I won't take a lot of time with the bill, but I do want to make sure that the bill covers those things that we just talked about. Section 1 of the bill, page 1, this creates two new sections, 197207 and 197209. One of these then describes the Range Management Operations Fund. That section A, starting at the top of A and B, at the top of page 2, that describes the fund that I have called an enterprise fund. And then it also goes on and talks about how those monies under section B, if received, would then be distributed and transmitted to the state treasurer, and then how they are then dispensed with. The bottom, page 2, in regard to the administration and rulemaking, page 3 of the bill, A, transmitted funds could be continuously appropriated to the military department for the adjutant general for the purpose of, of those things specified. Day-to-day range operations, ensure safety. Guard training in terms of customers and users, including personnel, maintaining of the management, installation, construction, all the things, fire mitigation things. No minimum balance would be required, and there may be a drawdown to a zero minimum balance. So it's pretty much at the disposal of those of the military. The Adjutant General on Section D at the top of little d at the top of page 4 has the ability to promulgate rules and regulations. A report, section E, given to the Joint Transportation Committee annually. And finally, lines 15, 16 is the sunset date, which is set at June 30th, 2021. Mr. Chairman, I would then pause for any questions or defer it to anyone else who had comments.
Mr. Chairman, page 1, starting on line 5 and line 6, providing for a continuous appropriation. I would like us to discuss that particular aspect of this bill a little bit. I'm particularly sensitized to this issue right now, Mr. Chairman, because continuous appropriations have become an abuse at the federal level. It turns out that most of the most recent, the major federal forum, the ACA, is funded with continuous appropriations, not the regular appropriations that come through the Congress. And it's one of the ways the legislative branch there has lost control of the federal budget. And it is potentially a major abuse. There are some occasions where we probably should use continuous appropriations. Maybe this is one of them. But I think we ought to discuss where is it appropriate to use a continuous appropriation so that the bureaucracy no longer has the scrutiny of the budget process. And I think we're within the bounds of the Wyoming Constitution here, which in the relevant article is Article 3, Section 35, except for interest on public debt, which thank goodness we mostly don't have, money shall be paid out of the Treasury only on appropriations by the legislature. And, yeah, this is an appropriation. It has a sunset date on it, so it's a six-year appropriation. It's not a specific dollar amount set forth in the statute, I believe. But is this an appropriate occasion, and when should we use continuous appropriations? And I think maybe addressing this question up front would be worthwhile in preventing it from growing into a major abuse.
Senator Nicholas.
I almost did it the last time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill should give you two great concerns. First of all, it earmarks revenue to a special purpose. And second of all, as just described, it creates a continuous appropriations. With respect to the earmarking of the bill, so this property generates revenue, and the revenue now goes to the general fund. If the military department wants resources from those revenues, it has to come to the legislature and justify it as it does in all other revenues. In this case, the taxpayers of Wyoming paid millions of dollars to acquire that property. It wasn't acquired by military department for their resources. It wasn't acquired with their money. It was acquired with the resources of the taxpayer. The military department comes in and seeks annual appropriations for Camp Guernsey for a multitude of things. When they burn down the fences, they come and ask us for money to redo it. Those fences, when they have other damage to the property caused by their operations, they come and ask for money. And right now they're required to come to the JAC, defend that like any other agency. If you get in the process of the program of allowing people to have agencies to have earmarked revenues, it is a dangerous pathway to go. It's the slippery slope that says we're going to give everybody their own sources of revenue, and then they don't have to compete or prioritize within all other sources of all other general funded obligations. I submit to you the better way of budgeting is that all revenue goes to the general fund, the budget reserve. Every agency has to come in and defend their needs against everyone else's needs. The second part of the bill with respect to continuous appropriations, we do have those instances where we have allow agencies to collect fees. They're generally nominal fees, and to use those fees on a continuous basis for a specific purpose without having to come and defend and seek an appropriation and authorization to spend those. Those are continuous appropriations. In this instance, that's not the case. Once again, they've received we have purchased millions of dollars of assets. And to give this agency the opportunity to have its own account where it gets a continuous appropriation, it doesn't have to defend it. It doesn't have to come to the legislature, to the joint appropriations, or anybody to seek those appropriations. What ends up happening is you just forget about it. Then they come in and ask, when the fences burn down, they ask for money for that. They ask for money for this or that. And never having to defend or even remind you that they have their own special account out there that the agency gets to decide on its own. So even if you said we're going to earmark these revenues for this purpose, you should still require that they come and seek an appropriation and authorization on an annual basis, biennial basis, to come back and spend those dollars. It's bad practice to allow agencies to have a continuous appropriation specifically where it's not a defined single item. But in this instance, I doubt that the request of the agency will change significantly. They come and they ask for lots of money for the operations of this facility. And now they're saying we want to have our own earmarked money. We want a continuous appropriation that we do not have to defend or explain to anybody. Every agency would love to have those funds and those dollars available. It's simply bad practice. I'd urge you caution in looking at this bill. It sets a bad precedent. Gives an opportunity for these monies just to disappear from accounting, from anybody ever looking at again.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess a little history on that is that these funds were coming back to the Guard. When they had the fences burned down, it was actually more money than what was coming in these funds. The Appropriation Committee, I think, made the right decision, brought it forth this body, that we'll pay for the fences, but we'll take away the grazing fees that were coming to you for that year, and that kind of offset the appropriation that we had specifically for the fences that were burned down. So they were in the hole $50,000 or $60,000 versus what was coming in, versus what had to go out that particular year, and we took care of the situation. And the question is, when do you actually have these reoccurring type of things that take place or should take place? And I agree with the President that it is a slippery slope in some regards, that you have to make a measured decision in your thought process. So look at a few of the things that we do it this way. We do it for the court system right now, where they have a fee, and in two different areas, in legal aid, because that is a reoccurring, unavoidable liability. We do it in the court system on their modernization, and because that's basically an unavoidable, reoccurring liability. We also do it with the canteen accounts for DOC. Now, each one of those canteen accounts come in, and we do see it in the budget process, but basically the canteen account is set up is that when a member of one of the institutions buys something from their general store, then that money is in that fund, that account, so they can restock the shelves. And so that's when we do it there. And we also do it in the high-risk pool, where we take and interrupt the flow of the insurance premiums tax, and it goes into the high-risk pool because that's an unavoidable, reoccurring liability. And, folks, when you have a ranch, every year you've got to go out and maintain your fences because good fences make good neighbors. And that really is a reoccurring, unavoidable liability to your business. And it's the same liability that the Guard has in their business when they're running cattle up on that. And it's a symbiotic relationship between the cattle grazer, the Guard, and the community. Each one of them have a responsibility. The man leasing the ground has a responsibility to make his payments. The Guard has a responsibility to make sure that the fences are in order. And they're in good order because you don't want to have that cow wander out there, you know, in the middle of the firing range. Plus, as I said, in appropriations, it's the 4th of July and you're having a barbecue, you know. So, yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm having a Tony moment with the good president over here. Okay, Mr. President, I mean Mr. Chairman, it's a reasonable thing to know and to believe that these expenses occur all the time. They're there every year. The Guard's going to put the money to good use. We're going to have an opportunity in 6 years to take a look at this. We need to modify this bill to make sure that it comes in as a separate line item to make sure that the JEC knows what's going on specifically. There wouldn't be any trouble at all for the Guard to have a one-page report so JEC knows, you know, what they're spending the money on. And so, Mr. Chairman, I hope that the body looks at this favorably.
Senator Meyer, do you need Sergeant at Arms or anything of that, sir? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this bill presents us with kind of a mixed case in this area. There is some justification, I think, for either an earmark or a limited continuous appropriation such as is in this bill, because we're charging a higher fee than the market would demand without the services. And from what I know of agricultural leasing and whatnot, and we do some, the fee is we're getting is significantly higher than we get if we didn't provide some services. So that providing the services, you're going to get that money. You've got to provide the services. It means one way or another, the guard's got to have the legal authority to do it. Maybe the better solution, rather than a continuous appropriation, is an earmark that comes through the way the earmarks do and comes through the budget and does get some scrutiny. Maybe that's the better solution here. Maybe it should apply to only part of the revenues, because we could probably get $5 an AUM just on a lease with no services. But that might mean the lease would start, lessee would start to interfere in the military's use of the land as for military purposes. So there's some reason to say, no, maybe we better control it, provide the services ourselves. You'll get better use out of the land. I don't know the specifics on that. But I would hope that as we get towards second reading on this, that we could come up with some kind of a compromise that reflects the reality more than just a continuous appropriation of the whole amount.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you know, folks, we have a lot of experience with the operation of lands throughout the state, so that the State Land Investment Board, SLIP Board, manages properties that are trust lands and acquired lands throughout the state. And, in fact, we expect that those lands will generate revenues and be returned to the general fund, and they are part of the operation of, in some instances, schools, in some instances, our general fund. And when the State Land Investment Board has come back to us and asked for an appropriation for specific monies to maintain the properties, whether it be trust lands or state lands, in good condition, we have listened to them, we have heard them, and we have followed their recommendations. And in fact, we have appropriated back to them appropriate funds for the management of state lands throughout the state. And we've demonstrated as a legislature that we understand these issues, and we understand that in some instances, as a landowner, you must spend money to keep your property in good shape for future leasing. So that's something we're quite familiar with and we've done. But we also expect that the lands of the state will earn income, and if that income, all the income from state lands, from all sources, comes into the general fund, and we do allocate and we consider all obligations. So when you look at what's happening here, we have a special issue that's developed. We've spent tens of millions of dollars to acquire land for the military department, generally to be used for national defense training. Not simply Wyoming, but national defense training. And incident that, we've created large buffer areas that are available for ranching. And those are assets, and that money, I submit to you, should be collected like any other land that we have acquired, and the money should go into the general fund, and then the request should be come back. Now, when the JAC looks at those requests, among other things, they can ask simple questions. What's the guard's resources? Do you have the personnel? Do you have extra time to provide these services and do some of these services on your off time? How do we do this productively? And look at what the expenditures are asking to be done. They're asking for authority to ensure the safety of Camp Guernsey. Now, why would grazing fees be related to the safety of the camp? And any other Wyoming National and Training Area customers. You talked about they're allowed to employ personnel. Almost never do we allow agency funds or selected funds, either whether it's agency or trust funds or any type of funds, to be used to hire personnel. We control the growth of government by demanding and insisting that any time employees are hired, they come through the state budgetary process. The military department does receive compensation and amounts from federal entities coming and using the property. They should be a steward of this property and this resource, and when possible, they should be collecting resources from the users of that facility to pay for a lot of these items. So all this gets muddled, and it's taken off the balance sheet, and we allow them to continue seeking those contributions. There was mention about the court system. Again, with the court system, we allowed a specific tax to be made for a specific purpose, but we don't allow the expenditures to occur without seeking an appropriation. So with respect to court fees and others, the tax is allowed, but expenditure requires the courts to come back to the state of Wyoming and ask for authority and permission by an appropriation to spend it. With respect to canteen funds, those are generally funds that were paid for individuals for their billeting, for their services, or for their personal effects, and those canteen funds are different. They're of limited amount, designed for a specific purpose for military individuals, and it was never intended that those would be revenues of the state. Where does the state of Wyoming get back some of its investment in the tens of millions of dollars that it puts out? This removes all of that, gives them an earmarked source, and allows them to spend the money without oversight or appropriation or authorization.
I think I'll go to Senator Sky King von Fleetern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as safety of the camp goes, limited access. I mean, there's moments where they can't get on to do their improvements to fix the fence, and so that's where the safety aspect of this bill comes in. The sunset date that's written in there, we won't forget about it. We get a whole list every couple of years. When we come back in the session, says the following are going to sunset. We won't forget, and we can have that same debate at that time. They also have to give us a report that's in that bill. Every year you'll know exactly what they spent it on. They're trying to develop a simple business plan in there, in this bill. They're trying to say we have certain expectations. We charge more money for what you for the acreage that we allow a cow to graze, and therefore you deserve something back for that. And so we do, and sometimes we don't, because apparently a couple of years ago, appropriations decided that they didn't need to receive their money they had received in grazing fees. Some of the military activity precludes some of that repairs that I said earlier. You don't want people out there that you don't know about that are fixing fence or working on the water well when you decide to go live. You also want to make sure that their cows are in the right area and you don't have the smell of barbecue beef. So, and one other factor, the water systems. We get the benefit of that water system in case of fire. When they burned those fences down, that was the federal government issue. Federal government does not allow you to backcharge for damages. When they pay you a daily usage of the facility, and you basically have to live with that. They also pay you to feed the people, but beyond that, you don't have that recourse to go back and get that money. This is a good bill. It's about time that we let them take care of their own repairs, limited access to the firing ranges, and to provide a better product for charging more for their grazers.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I served on the committee during the interim, and appreciate the conversation because we had this same conversation during the interim. And I do appreciate the cautions brought forth by our president. I've got them in my pocket, and I'm going to take them with me. And you know, to answer my friend from Casper's question, is it appropriate in this instance that we allow these funds to go directly back? And for me, it is appropriate, and it comes back to something I think is, it's kind of interesting that a couple of years ago, our friend from Glen Rock stood up and talked to us, and we passed legislation regarding cowboy ethics and the cowboy way. Well, really, that's what this bill is all about. It's about allowing us to be good neighbors to our eastern friends. You know, if we don't fund what we've promised that we're going to do for those ranchers in that area, we're going to end up having to shut down grazing on our state lands. I'm not interested in that. I don't want to build a fence around that and not let our neighbors come in and use it. But we have to have safeguards in place. So we want to be good neighbors. That means we have to return some funding back there so that we can live up to our commitment. And that allows us to live up to a handshake. And that's really what the cowboy way is. I think that the former chairman did a good job of explaining to you why that safety concern is really all about. That's why we charge the extra money. That's why that money's got to go back to that property so that we can assure the safety of the camp. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on and for this bill.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, part of the safety thing is that the cattle graze the grass, and that takes the fuel load, so that reduces your fire risk. And so that's where the word safety came in that regards. That was the discussion that we had. And I would guess that I would hope we move this ahead. One of the options might be, if we want to get something back to the state, that we net out the $5.13 per acre or per AUM that is associated with state fees, and the part that's over that, you know, really is specifically for the fencing and the water and all the other things in excess of that. And so if you want to split it out, get money back to the state, that's one way to do it and differentiate between the dollars that are received for grazing.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Plenty of good discussion, good points that we need to continue to talk about. I would just hope, speaking directly to the members of the body, that we could move this forward today on first reading. I think there's been a number of options put forth that we could perhaps work into this bill. The bill is very well intended. It has safety factor in it. It has sideboards on it. It does have oversight. And be it semantics or not, continuous appropriation or authorization, those are things that we can work with. Plenty to work here for good purpose. Members of the community need that asset. I would just ask your favorable consideration. Let's move it forward. We can work on it.
Questions have been called for. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the committee whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 30, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 30 has passed the committee of the whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bebout. Mr. Majority.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again until 2:30.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
we read these bills in? Is there committee the whole bills? Do you have any other business you want to do? They just do announcements and then. Are there any announcements before Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. President. Joint Appropriations will meet as soon as we recess here in room 302 to hear presentations for the outlook on oil and natural gas sectors, and urge you all to come as soon as possible. And I would ask the members to be aware of the Appropriation Committee's need to get up there, so if you'd let them have a shot at lunch real quickly, that'd be great. And then upon adjournment, Joint Appropriations will meet in room 204 to hear agency hearings on mixed martial arts and game and fish.
Senator Ross, where was the meeting?
302.
302 for the?
Oil and gas.
Oil and gas. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet in approximately 20 minutes up in S18 to consider Senate File 39, Industrial Siting Permit Amendments, Senate File 65, Savings and Loan Associations, Senate File 70, if we have time, Cooperative Electric Utility Rate Adjustment Notice.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I'm sorry, your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. in room S19 at the top of the stairs. We'll take up Senate File 53, Special Elections Time Limits, Senate File 54, Election Code Revisions, and Senate File 33, Precinct Committee Persons Elections. And, Mr. President, tonight is the reception sponsored by the Northern Arapaho Tribe and the Wind River Casino. It will be at 6 o'clock at Little America.
Senator Von Flatern, come see me. Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet upon adjournment in S14 to discuss Senate File 29, Motor Vehicle Driver's License Exemptions, 27, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Highway. Senate File 19 will be laid back at the sponsor's request until Wednesday. That's VIN inspections. So we wanted to make sure that the clerks could be here on a day that wasn't their day off, so that'll be Wednesday, and we'll look at Senate File 71, Recreation Safety Act.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Travel Committee number 6 will meet tomorrow, Tuesday, January 20th at 8 a.m. in room S14 to consider the following bill, Senate File 69, Non-Resident Allocation of Game Licenses.
Just for a moment, Senator Von Flatern, I wonder if the Minerals Committee understood we were postponing lunch so that folks could attend the. Senator Von Flatern, were you aware that we were extending the lunch time to 2:30 so folks could attend the briefing for minerals and. Wonder if that will accommodate your schedule to allow your members to attend the appropriate. Okay, so the
Queens.
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. President. No, I was not aware, but we can do that in about 40 minutes. Is that what appropriations to about half the hour?
The Rules Committee is going to meet at 1:30 to 2:30, so. We assume that from 12 to 1:30, members be available to get lunch and then to listen to the mineral evaluation folks, which I think is important for your committee. So if you postpone it to 1:30, you should have an hour to do your work. Will that work?
Mr. President, your Minerals number 9, Economic Development, will convene at 1:30 then.
Okay.
So we will. That's an hour?
1:30 to 2:30. So we have a postponed the. We're going to come back at 2:30 instead of 2 to allow noon work to be completed, and allow members to listen to the mineral
revenue forecast. This morning I heard that folks are thinking $65 oil for 5 years. That's a pretty significant issue if that's so people ought to be listening to that. So you've heard the, based upon the request or motion of the majority floor leader without objection, we stand at ease or stand in recess until 2:30.